This is the Truth Hurts program with Steve Z. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Truth Hurts program, the program that tells it like it is, exposing the lies of the left, the deception, the deceit, the double standard of the Democratic political party in the United States of America, and lots of other things that should be of interest to every single law-abiding, tax-paying American out there. It is Wednesday, the 17th day of April 2024. Let's get started with some of today's important stories, shall we? Rules for thee, but not for Joe Biden. Ohio officials rejected a plan from the Democrats to get President Joe Biden on the November presidential ballot after the party scheduled its convention past a state election deadline. Secretary of State Frank LaRose warned Ohio Democrats earlier this month that Joe Biden is at risk of not making the November 5th presidential election ballot. Why? Because state law requires officials to certify the ballot 90 days before an election, which this year is August 7th. The president will not be officially nominated until the Democratic National Convention, which occurs on the 19th, 12 days late. Simply put, Joe Biden and the Democrats did not follow the law for getting on the ballot. Therefore, he should simply not be allowed on the ballot, period. Rules are rules. Laws are laws, right? Well, according to Biden and his people, Biden's above the law. They want to hold Donald Trump accountable if he spits on a sidewalk. But Joe Biden can get away with something major like not complying with election law? Double standards ride again. In a letter to the Secretary of State, Mr. LaRose's office, Attorney Don McTeague said the Democratic Party would provisionally certify Biden and Camel Toe Harris ahead of the August 7th deadline. He claims that Biden had already secured enough delegates for the Democratic nomination after facing no significant party challengers. Biden won Ohio's presidential primary, allegedly with 87% of the vote. But it's too late. It's like demanding you get something at the sale price long after a sale has ended. If President Biden and Vice President Harris are not listed on the ballot as the Democratic Party candidates, their supporters in Ohio would be stripped of the opportunity to associate with their preferred candidate, McTeague wrote. Oh well, I guess Biden and the Democratic political party should have complied with the Ohio state law. Attorney General Dave Yost's office says provisional approval won't work. Nor can the electoral deadlines be unilaterally changed just because Joe Biden wants them to be. The law mandates the Democratic Party actually certify its presidential and vice presidential candidates on or before August 7th, 2024. An attorney for Julie Pfeiffer on Attorney General Yost's staff told this directly to the legal counsel. No alternative process is permitted, period. This didn't happen. Therefore, Biden should not be allowed on the Ohio ballot. The letter leaves Democrats with only two options. Hope the Ohio legislature will pass some new law to change things, or file another lawsuit. Lawmakers could pass an exemption to the 90-day deadline by May 9th. They did that in 2020 when the Democrat Party scheduled their convention too late. But the chances of that are slim. Top Democrats said they're deferring to the Biden campaign and the National Democratic National Committee, and Republican leaders, well, why would they want to lend a helping hand? Without Ohio votes and without Ohio Electoral College electors, Biden could be screwed. But Biden is responsible for his own election interference. How special is that? Senate President Matt Huffman is a Republican from Lima, Ohio, and he said, "I think it's a Democratic problem. There should have to be a Democratic solution, and none has been proposed to me." By the way, Ohio is not the only state with election deadlines before their conventions. Alabama and Washington State are in the same boat. Washington's Secretary of State is a Democrat. He'll likely cheat and go ahead and accept a provisional certificate. This according to the Seattle Times. By the way, Oklahoma, Illinois, Washington, and Montana did the same thing in 2020. Anything to steal an election, right? McTeague and a spokesperson for the Biden campaign, by the way, have declined to answer any questions about their potential next steps. I've been promising since Monday to talk to you about Biden going nuclear at the border. Biden has always had the same option that Donald Trump had, that Barack Hussein Obama had, that George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, and cigar Bill staining the blue dress Clinton had. He could put an executive order out tomorrow and demand that his Justice Department, his Border Patrol, his Immigrations and Customs Enforcement officials, his Customs and Border Protection officials, and even call up the National Guard from multiple states to simply stop all crossings at our southern border. In fact, it is a president's responsibility and part of the oath of office that a president takes when he assumes office to secure our borders, to protect the United States of America, and to defend our Constitution against all enemies and invaders. Biden could go nuclear at the border. He could shut it down today. But you see, doing so would present him with a massive problem. With over 100 million illegal immigrants in the nation right now that we know of, including the gotaways and those that were simply released by Biden into the nation unlawfully, Biden's afraid that if he shuts the border down and keeps all of their cousins and kin from joining the illegals already here, they might turn on the Democratic Party. They might turn on Joe Biden. They might revolt. They might rebel. They might protest. Biden's road to a dramatic executive order to stem illegal border crossings has been expected for weeks now. It's been reported in the news. He's going to stop them. But he keeps delaying it. It's now dragged out for multiple months as he prepares for the obvious legal challenges that will be brought forth by the ACLU. And by a bunch of illegals represented by a bunch of attorneys looking to make bank on the illegal immigration in the U.S. He will also face political backlash, as well as have to be faced with the reality that he does not have enough people, enough resources at the federal level to actually secure the southern border that he has opened up to illegal immigration. Now, why does it matter? Republicans are obviously making Biden's border blunders the top issue for the 2024 election, both at the presidential and vice presidential level, and at every level of Senate, House of Representatives, Governor, State Senate, State House of Representatives, all the way down to dog catcher. Democrats have failed the citizens of the United States with regards to illegal immigration. Biden has been trying to find the right language, he claims, to impose a crackdown without getting shut down by liberal courts or facing an open revolt by his progressive woke base. Those challenges, along with concerns that an executive order without the money from Congress to implement it simply won't be effective. And why should the Republican House of Representatives do anything to help the Democratic president just to help him win votes? This has led Biden and his top aides to be extra deliberative before they take any action. Or is it simply he's trying to run out the clock and say, Republicans wouldn't give me money even if I did an executive order. So it's their fault. It's Donald Trump's fault. It's Rush Limbaugh's fault from the grave. If Biden does pull the trigger and try to shut down the border, he would have to rely on the same section of the federal code known as 212F that Donald Trump used against illegal immigrants, including the so-called Muslim ban, and ultimately a ban on asylum seekers. That would mean Joe Biden is exactly like Donald Trump, and well, we know his ego, and the ego of the Democratic political party would never allow that to happen. The stakes are high for what one Biden administration official called the nuclear option at the border. Despite the political and practical risks to Joe Biden and his election possibilities, he is expected to take some executive action on the border in the next few months. And I say that would be too little, too late. And even the dumbest of Americans will see that it is just a political ploy to try and win him some votes in the upcoming election. Last week, the White House notified senior Capitol Hill aides that they would soon be briefed on the president's border plans. Leading up to a potentially explosive announcement, Biden is publicly expressing ambivalence about using Section 212F, which allows the president to limit foreigners from entering the country if they're deemed detrimental to U.S. interests. He's hinted that he might be headed in that direction, but that would be admitting that the illegal, criminal, law-breaking, invading, trespassing migrants, those criminals who are crossing unlawfully, are a detriment to the interests of our country. And they are. They're getting debit cards paid for by your tax dollars issued by the Biden administration without congressional approval. What about our own homeless? What about our own veterans? What about our own elderly? What about our so-called underserved minority communities? It's just shameful. Of course, I'm joking. Some people suggest that Biden should simply just go ahead and do it. In fact, in an interview with Univision, the Hispanic national network, Biden said, quote, "Some are suggesting I just go ahead and try it. And if I get shut down by the court, I get shut down by the court." Well, that's really nice, Joe. Surviving a legal challenge would be one obstacle for Biden and the White House. But there are also practical and political risks, particularly in this election year, when Republicans in Congress have successfully stiffed Biden because Biden doesn't know what he's doing. All of the billions and billions, let's just say trillions, of dollars that Biden and his administration have wasted sending money to the Ukraine, sending money to Hamas terrorists, sending money to Iran and Iraq, sending money to fund illegal immigrants living in our country. Yes, Republicans in Congress have shut down insane spending packages, which included a few dollars here and there for the border, because there is no control of our southern border by the Biden administration. Progressives on the other side of the coin have been grumbling about Mr. Biden's dedication to Israel in the Israel-Hamas war in the Gaza Strip. Biden has no options. To actually reinforce the border, he, like Trump, would need something only Congress could provide. What's that? The right amount of money to hire more U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents, Border Patrol agents, as well as Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents. Not to mention physical barriers like, I don't know, what did Donald Trump call it? The big beautiful wall that Biden shut down day one? Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, currently under impeachment by the U.S. House, expected to probably get let off the hook by the Democrat-controlled Senate this week, said, "We cannot give ourselves resources." The White House had hoped that Congress might pass some bipartisan border deal that might give the administration more resources or authority to block migrants and insane so-called asylum seekers from illegally crossing the border, as the numbers have spiked every single day of Biden's administration. But every so-called bipartisan border deal is more like a few pennies, a few scraps for the border, and lots of hush money for Volodymyr Zelensky and the Ukrainian government, so they won't rat Joe Biden out for the Biden crime family's problems on the world stage. The last so-called border deal failed because Republicans rejected the bill. Biden tried to blame it on Donald Trump, who, as a private citizen, simply said, "I don't think that's a good deal, giving a few pennies to the border when giving billions to Ukraine." That left the White House with the mere, more risky last resort option. What is that? Section 212F, the same option Donald Trump used. The timing of sweeping border action matters, especially in this, an election year. Officials are watching the trends at the border. Illegal crossings jump during the spring and summer, which will put much more pressure on gropey Joe Biden to take action to lower numbers and avoid a new string of GOP attacks against him ahead of the election. A White House spokesman told the news outlet Axios, quote, "Congress should do its job, and it has not. No executive action, no matter how aggressive, can deliver the significant policy reforms and additional resources Congress can provide that Republicans have rejected." Tell you what, you send Congress a border-only bill, a bill that only includes money to secure the border today. And I bet you the Republicans would vote for it, because the Republicans could claim a victory, saying, "We, the Republicans, have successfully pressured the Biden White House and Democrats to do what the American public has asked for all along, a straight-up border bill without any bullshit for Ukraine or Israel or Hamas or Iraq or Iran or feeding homeless vets or building a bridge in Baltimore or building a library in Her Highness Nancy Pelosi's honor. Just a standalone border bill. And it has to include building a physical barrier at the southern border. It has to include hiring more immigration judges who will honestly, fairly, and effectively look at so-called asylum claims and call them what they are. Bullshit. You can't claim asylum from Guatemala or Venezuela until you have claimed asylum with the country next door. In many cases, that country was Mexico. These so-called asylum seekers in the U.S. have not claimed asylum in Mexico, so therefore they are automatically disqualified for asylum in the U.S. Alejandro Mayorkas told reporters that the administration weighs actions to solve the border problem, quote, every day, unquote. Bullshit. He outlined several potential drawbacks. But you see, he lies every time he opens his mouth. He claims it's unclear whether any of the actions they could possibly take would survive litigation. Remember, Trump's executive actions on immigration failed constant litigation when he leveraged that 212F program to block illegal border crossings. A liberal federal judge appointed by Obama blocked the Department of Homeland Security from enforcing it in a politically motivated move. It's already against the law for asylum seekers and illegal immigrants to cross our border anywhere than other than the designated lawful entry points. Biden and Mayorkas have opened the door completely. Closing it just for votes will clearly be seen as opportunistic, pandering for votes, and even the dumbest of Democratic voters should be able to see right through it. You're listening to the Truth Hurts program. Speaking of Biden blunders, his latest student loan cancellation will cost taxpayers over $559 billion, and households earning $300,000 and more actually benefit the most. Big bucks, you got it. And it's all coming from the Biden administration. His latest student loan cancellation plans will increase the total cost to taxpayers a whopping $559 billion and will benefit households earning more than $300,000 in annual income the most, according to a University of Pennsylvania Penn Wharton budget model. Wait a minute. Penn? Isn't that where the Penn Biden Center was located? And yet their estimate is proving that Joe Biden's process of illegally, unlawfully canceling student debt will cost the taxpayers almost $560 billion and benefit wealthy Americans the most? The $475 billion in projected costs over a decade for Biden's so-called saving on a valuable education plan is in addition to the $84 billion he's trying to send now to forgive student loans unlawfully. The policy is unconstitutional, and it is part of Biden's quest to buy votes. In reality, this plan will shift the responsibility of paying for loans owed by high-income earners who frequently incurred them onto the backs of you and I, the taxpayers. Many of the taxpayers, by the way, do not even have a college education. Aside from the new $559 billion price tag, the Penn Wharton budget model finds that the new plan will also relieve some longer-term student debt for about 750,000 households who make over $312,000 each year in household income. That's right, boys and girls. Households earning more than $312,000 in income per year with more than 20 years in repayment will see an average $25,541 in debt relief under Biden's new scheme, far above the $4,899 average
according to that University of Pennsylvania Wharton School of Business model. The administration's new plan cancels student loan debt without any income limits for borrowers who only have undergraduate student debt and entered repayment 20 years ago, and for those with graduate student debt that the first entered repayment 25 years or more ago.
Hey, Mom. Hey, Dad. I want to go to college and party and drink and drop out and screw everything around without a degree. Or maybe an undergrad degree in, I don't know, gender studies. Can we do a student loan and then never repay it? Even though you make over 300 grand a year, huh, Dad? Huh, Mom? Can we? I want to party with my friends.
Here's the big question, my Truth Hurts program listeners. Where's my money? I didn't take out student loans, but now I have to pay for others who did? I have to pay back all of my own loans? How fair is that? Why in the hell am I paying for other people's debts? Biden's quota higher education secretary, Miguel Cardona, argued last week that the administration's policies, quote, give hardworking Americans some breathing room, unquote. Really? Sounds like hardworking Americans are having to pay for other people to go to college and party. He says the administration will remain relentless in their pursuit to bring relief to millions across the country. How? By screwing hardworking, taxpaying Americans who didn't get to go to college because they couldn't afford it, couldn't qualify for a student loan, and didn't get an arm or a leg blown off in the military? How many Americans did go into the United States Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, National Guard, Coast Guard, in the hopes of getting the GI Bill to pay for their colleges? How many of those Americans who joined our military lost an arm or a leg, or at least a finger, a toe, or an eye, or their hearing, or got cancer from drinking tainted water? By screwing hardworking, taxpaying Americans who did not benefit from what becomes essentially now a free college education for rich folks. My question is, doesn't Joe Biden forgiving debt to people who didn't serve in the military amount to him pissing on the graves of those soldiers who died in combat in the hopes of not dying in combat and coming home and using their GI Bill? Is Joe Biden spitting in the faces of those military personnel who suffered, who lost limbs or bodily functions in the hopes that they could come home and get a college education, only now to find out that they, even if they didn't get a college degree, are going to have to pay for some rich kid who did game the system and now gets to game the system thanks to Joe Biden simply forgiving their student loan debt? What about pissing on the graves of those who died in combat, spitting in the faces of their parents who lost children in combat, in the hopes that their kid might get to come home and go to college? Biden's plan is pissing on their graves, and it is disgusting and shameful. Now he's facing two separate lawsuits from Republicans over plans to reduce that student loan debt. His major plans to reduce and cancel federal student loan debt has irked many in America, including Republicans. Two groups of GOP-led states are now taking legal action against him and his Department of Education. In all, 18 states have joined one of two lawsuits challenging that Saving on a Valuable Education plan launched last year. Both of the lawsuits claim Biden and his education department do not have the legal authority to bring about these new plans, as they did not have the backing of Congress, who controls the purse strings. First lawsuit was filed by Kansas Attorney General in March, claiming the Biden administration and the Education Department are transforming loans into outright grants from the federal government without appropriation from Congress. Missouri-based student loan contractor MOHELA stands to face an imminent loss of revenue thanks to gropey Joe Biden's unconstitutional plans. Yet again, the president is unilaterally trying to impose an extraordinarily expensive, controversial policy that he could not possibly have passed through Congress, according to the second lawsuit. The latest attempt to sidestep our Constitution is only the most recent instance in a long but troubling pattern of the President, Joe Biden, relying on innocuous language from decades-old statutes to impose drastic, costly policy changes onto the American people without their consent or the consent of Congress. There's no such thing as canceling a debt. It's only shifting that debt to those who will be forced to bear its weight. Combat veterans paid for their education in blood, sweat, and tears. And this unconstitutional redistribution of wealth is a slap in their face. It's a slap in the face to every working American who made a different choice. Every legal tool at the disposal of these states to halt any attempts by the Biden administration to saddle Americans with other people's debt will continue. And I don't blame them one single bit. Meanwhile, NPR National Public Radio refuses to admit their liberal bias, and I think it's time to defund them. NPR's obsession with identity, gender, and race is ingrained in almost every story they put on the air. Now they're on the hot seat after senior business editor Yuri Berliner last week wrote a thoughtful yet damning piece in the Free Press publication detailing the actual factual things going on at NPR. National Public Radio has moved from objective reporting directly to activism. They choose which stories they will cover or which stories they will ignore based on which political side would benefit. I'll give you a hint. It's the Democrats who win. In D.C., where NPR is headquartered, their staff includes 87 registered Democrats working in editorial positions and zero Republicans. Not a single one. NPR is a company that brags and boasts about how diversity is a core value and central to its content, hiring, audience, and workplace. But this seems to be a huge conflict to that statement. And your tax dollars fund this entirely liberal-based, woke, progressive operation. What's more troublesome is that NPR seems dead set on changing absolutely nothing. They've actually gone on the defensive. They're unable, unwilling to address their internal problems. In fact, they won't even admit there is a problem. This gets right to the heart of why trust in the media has declined so much in the recent decades. A Gallup poll from last year found that only a third of Americans trust the media, including radio, TV, and newspapers. This is a precipitous fall from a peak of 72% who trusted the media in 1976. Democrats are far more willing to say they trust the media to be fair and accurate. 58% of them claim the media is fair because they only listen to liberal media outlets and never listen to the other side. Republicans don't trust the media. In fact, only 11% of Republicans polled say they have any trust at all. National Public Radio, NPR, is just another media outlet, but it's funded by taxpayers in part, and it places that organization in a much different position than The Washington Post, The New York Times, NBC, or even Fox News. Its new CEO, Kathy Marr, is getting attention because social media posts that she made before she was hired include calling former President Donald Trump a racist sociopath and boasting of wearing Joe Biden campaign hats in public. So how can she claim to be unbiased, fair, or balanced? This doesn't bode well for NPR. If NPR wants to double down on its woke, progressive, liberal mission, that's fine. But they should not be able to do it on my dime or that of any other taxpayer. NPR claims, quote, federal funding is essential to public radio's so-called service to the American public, and its continuation is critical for both the stations and program producers, including NPR. Well, how self-serving is that statement? It's not easy to get a set figure of how much taxpayer money actually flows to NPR, but I promise you it's a sizable sum of money. They get their funding by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is also fed by your tax dollars. It is long past time for NPR to either become central and centric and unbiased, or stop taking federal tax dollars altogether. If your network is so great, then why are you relying on welfare to keep your doors open? All right, gang, we've run out of time for this edition of The Truth Hurts program with Steve Z. Have a wonderful Wednesday, and I will see you on the next one. Bye-bye for now. Thank you for listening to the Truth Hurts program. Opinions expressed are protected free speech under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We apologize if you are offended, but we retract nothing. Background music by Jason Shaw and Audionautix. Copyright 2024, The Truth Hurts Program Network, all rights reserved.